Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and thank you for joining us, and hello. Great weather we've been having this weekend and the coming week. There is quite a bit of humidity expected. Tonight and tomorrow, there is a chance of rain and thunderstorms ongoing. Temperatures are expected to get up to nearly 90 tomorrow. Wednesday night should be mostly clear, as probably during the day as well, with temperatures up again around 90 during the day. And for Friday and Saturday, it's predicted to be around 30% chance of rain and thunderstorms, with temperatures dropping into the lower 80s. And Sunday should see around 50% chance of rain and thunderstorms. The first Ames Rummage Rampage has been going on over this past weekend, and if you live in Ames, you can't help but know that this past weekend is the weekend when furniture and all sorts of other things migrate, with a large portion of our residents being on the move. In the past, usually the migration was towards dumpsters, piles of furniture, mattresses, and just about any kind of household item you can imagine on street curbs and dumpsters. And this year, Ames tried a new approach, and they held a super rummage sale at the Ames Intermodal Facility parking ramp at 129 Hayward Avenue. Volunteers from many nonprofit organizations, including KHOI, helped with the collection of the donated objects or the objects that had to be moved out of people's houses and helped run the rummage sale in the parking ramp. Proceeds from the sales are being divided up among the nonprofit volunteer groups that are assisting. So this is a new project of the City of Ames, and the sale is, of course, a great thing for new students, but it's open for everyone. People had items picked up, and they also dropped them off all weekend at the intermodal parking facility. And the sale is still continuing today from noon until 6 p.m. and tomorrow also from noon until 6 p.m., although you can't drop things off anymore, you can still buy things. And from what I've heard, there are some great things to be found and great bargains to be had. We had a pretty large contingent of volunteers from KHOI, and one of them was Cynthia McClure, who is a longtime volunteer. And we chatted on Saturday about her shift. I asked her what she saw them selling at the rummage sale.
They had people lined up when they opened up at like 8.
There was a line to get in?
Oh, yeah. And they had furniture. It was hopping crazy. And there were people actually dropping off furniture. And sometimes, I kid you not, they would pull up with something really nice, like a sofa, and somebody would walk up and go, I want that sofa.
Before it was off the truck?
Before it was off the truck, before there was a price tag on it, because some people brought some really nice stuff. And actually, I bought a little hutch because it was just, it was lovely. Cute as a bug's ear. Made in Vermont. It's just that your grandma would have like little plates and little teacups. Mm. And
how much did you pay for it?
$20, but okay. It's solid wood and vintage, you know, 50s.
So describe a few other good things that you saw there.
Oh, my gosh. Somebody brought in a brand new $400 gym that they had never used. Yeah, I believe the gym is still there, and it was for $50.
What kind of stuff is at the sale?
Household items. I saw some. There was a raft. I saw a toboggan there. Every household item that you could possibly collect, from Christmas items to vintage ottoman in red, they had.
You were there with your husband, Chris?
Yeah, I volunteered him.
And what did you guys do?
We loaded items, and there were a couple sofas that were very heavy. They had some vintage sofas from the 50s that had hide-a beds inside, so these are not small items.
Was it fun doing this?
I thought it was fun. I thought they were very well organized. There were a lot of people and groups that showed up from many different organizations. I volunteered for KHOI there. I thought it was very well done, and the City of Ames did a great job. There was a nice breeze underneath the parking garage, and it was out of the sun. People bringing their items in, it was people giving back to this community.
Mm-hmm. And were people pleased with the items they were buying?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And probably my favorite moment when I decided to buy the little hutch, and it was like, I want that. Mm. Yeah.
Two of the items at the rummage sale came from KHOI.
Yes. like our sofas. And we had the sofas that are notorious.
If you have never been to KHOI, we have a storefront on Douglas Avenue. And so we have a large public space when you walk off the street where people socialize, where they work, where they meet. So there's sofas in front there.
That Ursula herself has slept on more than one occasion trying to make sure this station stays on the air. Anyway, I was there, and this young couple with six children decided to purchase this one plaid sofa, vintage, I would say 1950s, maybe 60s. It should outlive the kids, you know.
Yeah, it's a good sofa.
It was a good sofa. It was very, very heavy, very sturdy, and it was very long. So they purchased it, and then a nice couple was going to
Nevada.
How much? $10.
$10. Goodbye, sofa.
$10.
You were priceless.
Yes. The stories and the bands, the music that sofa has heard here at KHOI. There was some great live music that we've had.
That sofa helped start community radio in Ames, Ohio. So who did it go to?
I didn't get their name, but they, a young couple with six children in Nevada, Iowa. The oldest is 12 and the youngest is like 2. So, yeah, that's going to get a lot of use. You know,
did you get a picture?
No, I didn't get a picture. I didn't have my cell phone. So,
all right. So thank you, Cynthia, for the update.
You know, it's a good thing to think about next year.
Now, you can keep donating to the sale as long as it's there, right? You can bring things in.
Yeah, people were bringing things in. Mm-hmm. It's at the
Intermodal Transportation Center.
Yes.
And you can pull your car up.
Pull up and drop it off right there. We parked in the parking garage up there.
Oh. But even if you don't park in the garage, I found the parking was easy in the area.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the update from the Rummage Rampage. Thank you, Cynthia. And if you are in the area, stop by KHOI to check out our new birthday sofas.
Care of a generous donor. So
yes, brand new sofas at KHOI. Come and check it out. Sit on them. Tell us what you think. Okie doke. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.
That was Cynthia McClure about the Ames Rummage Rampage, first event held in Ames. Be interesting to ask Susan Guiasa when she comes in for her regular report if the city plans to make it an annual event. It sounds like it's going well. You can check out still today and tomorrow from noon until 6 p.m. what they're selling. However, they won't be accepting objects anymore. And this is happening at the Ames Intermodal Facility parking ramp at 129 Hayward Avenue. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, for Local Talk on KHOI, where we talk about community. Last week was, of course, a special week in our life as American citizens, as it was the second week of national presidential conventions. Last week was the Democrat convention, as you probably know, in Philadelphia. And we wanted to bring you impressions of the convention through the eyes of one of our own residents. Sandy Upstreet is from Story City. And she was a delegate at the convention. Thank you for coming in to join us to give us firsthand observations, Sandy.
Thank you for inviting me.
Even though it sounds like you're fighting a summer cold.
Yes, I am.
Sorry to hear that. So you're a delegate. Give us a brief description of exactly what that means.
Delegates go into the convention. They are elected at the district convention, or they're elected at the state convention. I'm actually a DNC member, and so I'm a delegate by virtue of that position.
A DNC member, a DNC is Democratic National Committee?
Correct.
So what do you mean by you're a delegate automatically by virtue of that?
When you run for the position, there is one man and one woman that are elected statewide in Iowa to serve on the Democrat National Committee. When you run for that position, you also run for the position of delegate, yes. The DNC is out of Washington, D.C. based, and they work with state parties and candidates. We are elected at the state level to serve on the National Committee. The National Committee meets 4 times a year, typically, twice a year, depending on the situation. And at that time, they go into meetings. They separate into various caucuses. There's Women's Caucus, there's Rural Caucus, there's Latino Caucus, very Asian American, all kinds of senior caucuses. So we attend caucus meetings, and then we have a general session where we hear reports about what is going on nationally and within the various states. We have speakers and
Okay, well, tell us what it was like being in Philadelphia. When you go to a convention like that, do the delegates from the state all stick together, or is it a diffuse experience where you're kind of all spread out?
Both. Every morning you have an Iowa breakfast, which the Iowa Democratic Party did a remarkable job of putting together speakers. We had wonderful people come, Senator Harkin, of course, and Congressman Loebsack. We also had Senator Kaine, Bernie Sanders, the Castro brothers, Senator Booker. We just had a huge range of wonderful speakers at the Iowa breakfast every morning. At those breakfasts, everyone gets together. Then during the day, there's various caucuses, such as I talked about earlier, but this is convention caucuses. And so people scatter to the caucuses or meetings that they are involved in. And then,
is that your choice or are you assigned?
No. You can go to whatever caucuses that you want to.
What caucus did you go to?
I went to the Labor Caucus and then part of the Women's Caucus. And a lot of times there's conflicts between one caucus time and mm-hmm. the other.
Right.
And the general session beginning at 4, we were advised to get there early mm-hmm. for those sessions. In doing that, it interfered with being able to attend some of the caucuses.
And what do you do at the caucuses? What's the result of being there?
Sometimes there's active participation. Usually it's a report mm-hmm. of what is going on. The women's issues, for instance, they have leadership, elected a leadership that talks about what is going on nationally, electing women candidates. We hear information from pollsters. We hear information from people like Charlie Cook from the Cook Reports that are kind of political pundits that give you a view of what's going on.
Now, when you went to the convention, Iowa had already essentially decided on its platform recommendations. Are there decisions at the convention made about a national platform, or has that already kind of been worked out before you got there?
The National Platform Committee met prior to the convention, mm-hmm. and the platform was put together and then recommended to the full body for ratification. So at the convention, we ratified the platform from the prior committee meetings.
There wasn't a whole lot of work to do, though, at the convention itself in terms of forming the platform.
No, that was mm-hmm. already done.
Okay. All right. I'm asking you all the stupid questions that you always wonder about when people go as delegates.
Sure, of course.
When you went to the convention, were all of the delegates voting for one candidate, or were there delegates for different candidates?
No, when we went into the convention, there were a block of Sanders delegates and a block of Clinton delegates. They were elected in Iowa
basis.
Back at home mm-hmm. To represent their individual candidates.
Who were you backing?
Hillary.
Mm-hmm. What percentage approximately were for Hillary? Which,
you know, I can't tell you exactly because when we got there, some of the Sanders people eventually ended up supporting Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we did the roll call at our Iowa breakfast, which is everyone was together at the breakfast and they called them off one by one and you gave your little presentation about why you supported the candidate you did, like a sentence, mm-hmm. and then cast your vote and then sign the ballot. And then that was presented to the national committee prior mm-hmm. to the roll call vote that actually was on the convention floor. It was interesting because one young woman who was a Sanders delegate said that she did not know the kind of things that Hillary Clinton had done for children and nationally and internationally. And she was amazed to find those kind of things out because sometimes you kind of get lost in the hoopla from social media and don't really know the candidates. And so as a result of really getting to know and understand the candidate, she switched her vote. There are some that switch there. There are some that will switch as we go down the road there, you know, and get out and work for Hillary. And, of course, there are some that just won't. And that's what a democracy is all about.
Mm-hmm. From where we stood, things started out acrimonious between the Hillary and the Bernie camp. Did that affect the conversations between Iowa delegates?
You know, I think there was a little bit of a problem. I give great credit to the state party. They worked really well. They tried Chair Andy McGuire and Executive Director Ben Fecky and the staff people really worked hard to try to work with everyone. And, mm-hmm. and that's a difficult job. And so I really hand it to them for the work that they did.
Participate in an event like this, what was most memorable for you?
The most memorable part of the convention was that moment that Hillary Clinton said that she humbly accepts the nomination for the presidency of the United States. So exciting to have a woman making history and sitting there and being a part of that historic event, and not just a woman, but a very qualified woman who's ready to take over the reins of the country on day one and move this country forward.
So for you, that was the moment you were waiting for and that really stood out?
Yep. Of course, that was the highlight. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sitting there on the convention floor and listening to speaker after speaker come up onto the podium and talk about the military and the great things from admirals and generals, and hearing the cons talk about the loss of their son. It's different than watching it on television because you're looking into these people's faces, and it has a really strong emotional impact. You feel like you understand, but of course you don't, because no one understands it. Have you not been through it? But it really has an emotional impact, and it makes you further want to work to build on the strength of this great country.
It's more real if you're there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. This is a stupid question, but it's a question that has come up with a lot of people. It's kind of fascinating how the signs that are held up have different messages, and they are held up at the appropriate moment for the speaker. And we were wondering, how do you actually get those signs?
They have floor whips that go out and hand out the signs.
So they have a schedule of signs to give you. And do you end up with a collection of signs, or how does that work?
Yeah, you can take them or leave them. Some people brought them back, others didn't. It wasn't as orchestrated as it has been in prior conventions. Typically, you know which sign they want you to hold up when. This time, people just kind of held up the sign that they felt comfortable with giving what was going on in the floor. If you noticed on the floor, you may see three or four different kinds of signs being held up at the same time.
Your takeaway from the experience?
I walked away very enthusiastic, with a great energy level to go out and work for the candidate. I really believe that the Democrat convention was a positive in here are issues. Here are the solutions, or how do we work together as a team for the solutions rather than inciting fear. So I just think that most of the delegates walked away with an enhanced energy. They went into the convention with an energy level, but I think it was truly enhanced, and I believe that'll carry forward through the November general election.
Okay, well, thank you. Were you worried about it at first?
No.
So you always felt confident that this would all come together really well?
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. So for you, the last night was really the night that meant the most, that was the most memorable for you?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear from somebody who's been there firsthand. I'm speaking with Sandy Upstreet, who's from Story City, a county delegate to the Democratic National Convention. And have you gotten your luggage yet?
I have not. Maybe Tuesday.
Okay. And what's next for you as a delegate now? What happens? Is your work done, or what happens now?
As a delegate, well, your work is never done because you're out knocking on doors and,
so now
and
you're
making
campaigning.
Phone calls, but campaigning. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Democrat National Committee meetings will continue, too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for joining
Thank
us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Local Talk, and that was Sheila E. and Family performing at the Democratic National Convention. Max Ennis is here. Max is an Ames resident and recent graduate of Ames High. Today he's here because he is organizing a public rally in Des Moines. Max, please explain to us what's going on.
So this rally is going to be held outside Camp Dodge on the 13th of August from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. The topic which we're protesting is general peace, specifically the use of unmanned drones and nuclear reproliferation, the fact that the amount of nuclear weapons seems to be, again, on the rise.
Why right now?
We're kind of at an interesting junction in terms of where American foreign policy is going to go next. We have the past 8 years behind us to reflect on the foreign policy of the Obama administration, and citizens have, I would say, a duty to reflect as a voter and as a moral actor who determines in some part foreign policy for the American government. What did I vote for that I shouldn't have voted for? But we also have an incoming president. We don't necessarily know who it is, but the two likely candidates to win the election, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, have taken antagonistic stances towards just about the entire world. We don't have a proper peace candidate this election. So I would say the proper step forward as a voter is not necessarily getting a new candidate in, because we know that's incredibly difficult, and so will this process be, but rather influencing both the candidates to be more peaceable and non-interventionist in their foreign policy stances.
So the timing has to do with the conventions being over and knowing who the candidates are now. And
yes,
in a sense, as a message to the candidates or to people who are voting for the candidates. And you're saying to some degree it's because you feel neither of these candidates are really addressing the issue of peace directly?
Yes. And the rally is going to be focusing on Hillary Clinton's foreign policy because, one, Donald Trump has taken more non-interventionist stances. He's made some very violent statements, but in his general statements of foreign policy, there's a general tone of live and let live, whereas Hillary Clinton has made repeated statements of promises to go abroad and hunt terrorists and make sure ISIS is not only contained but defeated, and continuing the imperial hubris that has marked the last 50 years of American foreign policy.
The direct thing that you're, protesting against are Hillary's interventionist policies,
Hillary,
abroad?
Yes, the issue of nuclear reproliferation, we see that as a form of intervention because it's still coercing other nation states and other organizations into compliance, even if there's no physical occupation of the location that we're trying to coerce. And secondly, drone strikes, because that is a physical occupation, but it allows the American public to not be as uneasy because there's no American lives being lost. And these have been two policies that the Obama administration has been pursuing vigorously, and the Clinton administration is looking to most likely continue these things, mm-hmm, as they haven't denounced them.
And where have they been pursuing these?
They stockpiled nuclear weapons in the United States. Drone strikes have been prevalent in Syria and Pakistan, most notably. But there's been other issues in the civil war in Yemen. And then with the civil war in Yemen, it's not just an issue of drones. It's also an issue of U.S. manufactured and sold bombs to the Saudi Arabians, who are combating the Houthi rebels. But the U.S. has aided in drone strikes against Yemeni rebels and civilians. In an attack in April of this year, they killed nearly 100 civilians with a drone that they sold to the Saudis, and shortly after banned cluster bombs, but a cluster bomb was not used in the bombing that killed 100 civilians.
Are there specific demands coming out of this rally?
Specifically the abolition of nuclear weapons and an immediate halt on the manufacture of new nuclear weapons and the end of coercion via drones and other aerial U.S.-manufactured bombs, the ceasing of exporting, and the ceasing of using those weapons in an offensive way.
Will there be speakers at the rally?
Yes. Philosophy professor Stephen Biggs from ISU has agreed to speak. We are working with the Des Moines Catholic Worker House, so getting a few people to speak from there, and I will be preparing remarks as well.
Tell us again where and when.
The rally will be happening at the entrance of Camp Dodge in Johnston, Iowa, on August 13th. That's a Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And is there some place online that one can find information?
Yes. If you go onto Facebook and look up the event, Protest for Peace! Des Moines, you'll be able to find a Facebook event with information section talking about what we're protesting, why we're protesting, as well as the ability to RSVP if you have a Facebook account. And in the discussion section, there's information about carpools and different posters you can print out to promote the event.
Okay. One more time, where to find the information?
The information is available on Facebook.com. If you look up the event, Protest for Peace! Des Moines, mm-hmm. You'll be able to find a whole page of information to direct you towards the event.
Thank you very much. This is Max Ennis from Ames and one of the organizers of a protest for peace in Des Moines. And again, the day and the time?
August 13th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Okay. Thank you, Max.
Oh,
This is Local Talk, and those are not local people. That was Swiss Yodeling by a group called Yodlergruppe Edelweiss-Sterne. Today, August 1st, is the Swiss national holiday, the Independence Day for Switzerland. The Swiss Confederacy and Swiss democracy go back all the way to the Middle Ages with the founding of the old Swiss Confederacy in August of 1291 when a group of local people got together and ousted Habsburg Empire from the region that we call Switzerland today. Switzerland is a direct democracy, which is a system of democracy that gives citizens an extraordinary amount of participation in the legislation process and granting the maximum of political self-determination. In fact, my mother's Swiss, and I saw many elections in Switzerland where people stood in the town square and raised their hands as a form of voting. The modern system of direct democracy, which includes formalized opinion polls and governance through frequent referendums, lie in the experimental phase of democracy in the 19th century when Switzerland was surrounded by monarchies on the European continent that showed little or no enthusiasm for democracy. Switzerland has about 8 million people and 4 official languages according to 4 different regions: French, German, Italian, and Romansh, which is a form of Latin that was preserved in the mountains. So, happy birthday, Switzerland. We've been joined by Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. Welcome, Keith. There was an apartment fire in Ames on June 6th.
Yeah, some listeners might remember that I was supposed to be here, but at 4:30 in the morning, I got a call that we'd had an apartment fire, and we had to go out and respond to it.
Keith comes here regularly to KHOI to talk to us about emergency management. That was an emergency that was happening in real time when you were supposed to be here. So tell us what happened. And I think the reason you recommended talking about this today, because it's a kind of a story which tells about how emergency management works and how the different services come together in ways that might be invisible to the general public.
Exactly. Oftentimes you'll hear me talking about how we have 3 parts to emergency management. We've got the individuals, and then we have government, and then we have businesses. And this is a classic example about how all of them came together. Although it was 2 months ago, you might remember that we had an apartment fire that burned that involved 33 different units within the apartment. It's what we would consider to be a medium-scale event for us to work on, but the first phase of the response was our government part of it. The Ames Fire and PD immediately responded to it.
Before we get into the whole rundown of what happened, just tell us real brief what the fire was. Who was in the building? What kind of a building was it?
It was a 33-unit apartment complex, pretty much down just a little bit to the west of Duff Avenue. Mm-hmm. A lot of international students that were living there, and the fire quickly took hold of the entire complex.
So it was pretty much burned down.
It was deemed to be uninhabitable after mm-hmm. they did knock down the fire, so it pretty much consumed the entire complex.
Okay, so question is, what happens when something like that happens? You have for Ames, a relatively sizable apartment building, quite a few people living there, and all of a sudden they all don't have a place to live.
Well, and some of the first step was that Ames immediately took care of the needs of the individuals.
Did everybody get out safely?
Everybody got out safely. Ames actually utilized what we call mutual aid, which is one of the examples on how we can make emergency management or disaster response a little bit more efficient and effective. They actually asked some of the resources from the Nevada Fire Department to come on over and to assist them with the fire. They needed a ladder truck to be able to rescue some of the individuals from the second and third floor.
So folks came from Nevada Fire Department as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's one example of working together.
The first agency involved, obviously, is the fire department.
Fire department and law enforcement responded, and the law enforcement individuals, I was working with Lieutenant Ropp, who immediately started to realize that they had 50 to 75 people that had been in this complex, and they needed to take care of them. And he did a very good job of ordering up some Cyride buses so that people could immediately get out of the elements and someplace where they could be warm and sheltered as they were doing it. And we immediately tried to take account of who we had there.
Okay, so the second agency that got involved, well, the third really, well, okay, I'm not going to give them numbers because that doesn't really make sense, but you've got the fire department from both Ames and Nevada. You've got the police department.
Exactly.
And now you've got CyRide involved.
CyRide.
For transportation.
Exactly. They reached out to them, so they're starting to mobilize their resources. I get a phone call about 15, 20 minutes after the event started, and also they contacted the Red Cross. So they're thinking ahead. They're trying to get these resources going so that we can take care of the folks.
And what did the Red Cross do?
The Red Cross came in, and they set up what they call a disaster recovery center. When I got on scene, we decided that we would move the people that had been displaced down to the Ames Auditorium so that we could start the process. And they come in with about 5 to 6 case managers that will start to talk to the people that have been involved, find out what their needs are, and to immediately try and provide them some assistance to get them through those first couple of days after an event occurs.
Okay, so then presumably you have the staff of the City Hall involved, too, because they have to open up and manage the auditorium for people to stay in.
Exactly.
While they figure out what to do. And then what happens next?
Well, another aspect to this is early in the morning, we asked the Salvation Army to bring up their mobile canteen so that we could give people a little something to eat in the morning. And that way we could keep them all in one place while the Red Cross went through and process them as they do. And also that canteen also went out to the first responders that had been on scene now since 4 o'clock in the morning to make sure that they could get something to eat and something to drink.
So the mobile canteen is like a food truck of some sort that brings people
exactly
food.
Right. Uh-huh. It's a food truck so that they can serve food out of it and hot drinks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then who else gets involved? So, okay, you've got the folks at City Hall Auditorium, and the Red Cross is working with them to help them.
They will provide some financial assistance mm-hmm. to them and also see if they're give them suggestions on how they might start to rebuild their life.
Now, fortunately, you haven't mentioned the hospital at all yet, so presumably nobody got hurt, but potentially that would be another area that could get involved, right?
That could be another area. Reunification, if people had been separated. The Red Cross also has a process where people, if we had a large-scale disaster here in Ames, where they could sign up, folks from outside of the area could find out if their loved ones were okay or not. That's another service that the Red Cross provides.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the DOT.
How
does the DOT get involved?
This was an odd one. To start to do replace documents or anything, you need something to verify who you were. A lot of folks lost their driver's license. We happen to have on our commission, my emergency management commission, one of our mayors that participates also works in the DOT, and I gave him a call because it was a Monday, and the Ames Driver's License Bureau is closed on Monday. And I was wondering if we could get that opened up, but he said we have a mobile driver's license van that they brought up here. And 8 to 10 folks got new driver's license, which allowed them to move on through the process that it was going to take to get themselves back up and going again.
Fine point detail there that can be pretty pivotal for everybody.
Definitely. A lot of people don't realize what it takes if you lose everything in a fire, and that's why we recommend have a grab-and-go bag that has copies of these very important documents.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so who's next?
Iowa State University.
Okay.
Like I said.
Oh, wait a minute. I have here Community Services and Public Health.
They also participated in our overall process. What we did is after we got the people in there and we started processing them through, we had a meeting at 12 o'clock, and we brought together people to try and look at what the problems were going to be now, and also for these folks that are busy, what are their issues going to be 3 days from now and further on down? One of the aspects is this is a pretty traumatic event. So we were looking to see if there were mental health issues, crisis incident stress management activities to offer to these folks. So we brought in public health, and we also brought in a community services that is better linked into that system.
Mm-hmm. And then the Visitors and Convention Bureau?
Yeah, another one that you wouldn't think about, but we work with them for our I-35 closure plan because they're plugged into the hotel network. We now had 50 to 75 folks that might conceivably be looking for a hotel room. So we contacted them and asked them, what's hotel availability? And they said, tonight, no problem. Tuesday night, it's going to get a little bit tight. Wednesday night, they're not going to be able to find a hotel room because it was ISU orientation and everything was booked. So, again, another way for us to reach out and also to notify the hotels that if you have folks coming by that are using the Red Cross can give out Visa debit cards to get people through those first few days. If you see one of them, this is what the situation is, and it's legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Now, Keith, throughout all this, what are you doing?
I am making some of the calls to get DOT lined up. I'm just trying to make sure that everybody is there, making sure that the right resources are there. I'm not doing much of the work. I'm just getting people there to do the work on behalf of those that have been displaced.
So are you one of the continuity people that kind of figure out what has to happen next and who needs to talk to who?
Exactly. A lot of ours is, again, we hosted the meeting that we had at 12 o'clock and then again at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to bring people together to get a sense of what everybody's doing, polling people to say, well, what are we forgetting? And then try and find somebody to plug into that. And then following up, okay, next morning maybe, hey, have you got this? So have you been able to do these different things you said you were able to do? No. Maybe somebody else can help us out with that.
So are you the coordinator of all this activity?
Pretty much. That's my role because, again, I'm relying on different people, the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, that's actually doing the activities with the folks. I'm just kind of in the background looking around to make sure we've got everybody there.
But you're the person who's figuring out who has to be contacted next and what needs need to be addressed.
Exactly. That's why my cell phone's got hundreds and hundreds of contact entries.
Okay. You mentioned Iowa State. How did Iowa State get involved?
Iowa State University, vast majority of the people displaced were not only Iowa State students, but international Iowa State students. So now this process of rebuilding their life gets even more difficult because a lot of their documents aren't as easily accessible. So we brought in the Dean of Students and we brought in the International Students section. And we were, again, coordinating stuff on campus. Hey, I'm not going to be able to make it to my final or my test. Well, they were able to, again, verify and contact the teacher and say, extenuating circumstances, let's work with this person. It got to the point where Iowa State was actually working with representatives of the Chinese embassy to come, who actually came here the next day to help out their students when it came to getting documents and those sorts of things put together.
Where did they come from?
Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have a counterpart over at Iowa State. So, again, it was easy. I contacted one person who then contacted within their structure. If they had needs, they went back through Angie Jewett, who was their emergency manager, over to me, and then I'd reach outside of their little communities. It's a lot about communications and making sure that we don't have different messages going or that a message is lost somewhere along the way when it comes to coordinating this stuff.
Well, I'm still thinking about the Chinese people from the embassy in Chicago, so that means you have to find them a place to stay, too.
They actually took care of themselves. They were very proactive when it came to taking care of their students.
Hmm. All right. Anybody else involved?
Well, one of the key elements was actually the business as we go to. We've talked, again, about the individual, about government. Professional property management did a couple of very good things. One of the first things they did.
What is professional property management?
They're the ones that were the rental agency, the property management agency that controlled the apartment complex.
Oh, they owned the apartment.
They owned the apartment.
Okay. So that was a business that owned the apartment.
It was the business that owned the apartment. They required all their renters to have rental insurance. One of the best things, you hear me say it all the time, is one of the best ways to take care of yourself during a disaster, have insurance so that you can get yourself up and going again. So that was one of the key things. And in the end, a lot of their residents had gotten insurance through the insurer they use. So they actually arranged to bring in insurance adjusters by 10 o'clock that day to work with the renters. They were also very proactive at getting their the remaining rent back to the individuals and their deposits going. And they worked with us to reach out to other rental agencies to try and find alternate housing for their folks, especially when they realized that their complex wasn't going to be usable in the near or long term. And as you know, renting here in the Ames community can be very difficult, especially at August when all of these are changing over. So, again, a very proactive business that really took care of their customers and also had a plan all put together to be able to react to something like this. So, in the end, Iowa State University offered up some of their dorm rooms for those that had been displaced temporarily. We only had one person that needed to use it because the whole system came together and everybody's needs were met. And again, this is Iowa, where a lot of the folks had friends that helped them out also to get them back on their feet. So everybody coming together, a little bit of a plan always helps out. And working with these folks, we always say in the emergency management community, we want to talk about this at 2 in the afternoon so that it's nice weather and we're in a nice controlled room as opposed to, like this one, 4 a.m. in the morning coming together trying to put together a plan. So this is why we have exercises. This is why we have a lot of training.
And this is Keith Morgan with the Story County Emergency Management Coordination. And we're using an incident that happened in June where then there was a fire in an apartment building here in Ames as an example of how emergency works and of how many different organizations end up getting involved, how much planning ahead has an effect on this, on a good outcome. And also it's interesting to hear from you, Keith, how complex this is. Do you ever worry that you are not thinking of something? Do you have a checklist? How do you keep on top of it and make sure that the people that are needed are contacted in time?
Well, it's every situation is never going to go the way that you had planned on it. But if you have some of these elements together, again, contact list that you can go through, and people smarter than me that will come up with suggestions and a process to get things going, it'll never be perfect. There's always things that we could have done differently and better. But you will be more ahead of the game, and you'll be able to think things through. It's little things like our process of getting together immediately after we got to the auditorium, who's going to do what, doing it at 12 o'clock and doing it again at 4 o'clock is much more valuable than having a static checklist that isn't going to account for things like international students or using the Iowa DOT licensing van. It's more that process of planning and thinking through and looking ahead and bringing people together to give you a lot of good ideas, things that you would have never thought of.
Well, it sounds like a number of these organizations have experienced emergencies before and had really thought it through and knew things that they could do. Some things that aren't even that intuitive, like the license truck.
And this is why we have here in Story County the Coalition for Disaster Recovery, which is if there are volunteer organizations out there that would like to be a part of a process like this, they can now see that we've got to work together beforehand. And through the Coalition for Disaster Recovery, we can identify ways that they might want to help out should we have a larger scale disaster like this. We can give them that training beforehand so that they can get going on their own and be a good part of a quick response to help out. So if they contact our office at 515-382-7315, we'll gladly work with them to help weave them into this process of taking care of their community when a disaster occurs, be it McCallsburg or a city as large as Ames. They all need volunteers that are trained before the disaster.
And your website?
Our website is on the Story County website. Mm-hmm. Go to departments, and then emergency management is there, and you can contact us there. We're also on Facebook, so just do a search for Story County Facebook, and they can find us that way, too. Mm-hmm.
Or just in general, search Story County Emergency Management.
That'll take them to one of those different avenues to contact us.
Okay, and this is Keith Morgan, the coordinator for Story County Emergencies. And thank you so much. Keith comes once a month, and we always look forward to hearing your stories, even though they're always about disasters.
I'm a bit of a pessimistic person, yes.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And thank you for joining us today. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, and we've been speaking with Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. And like I said, Keith comes once a month to help you understand emergency services better. And we've been talking about the recent fire in Ames and its aftermath to illustrate the many agencies and services and coordination that goes into an emergency like that for as good an outcome as possible. And it sounds like the outcome in this case was pretty good.
It turned out pretty good.
If you can say it that way. Earlier we spoke with Max Ennis. Max is organizing a peace rally in Des Moines. Sandy Upstreet, who was with the Story County delegate at the Democratic Convention. And we start off the show with a report on the Ames Rummage Rampage, given by producer Cynthia McClure. You can check out the Rummage Rampage still today and tomorrow from noon until 6 p.m. at the Intermodal Transportation Facility at 129 Hayward Avenue. But you can't bring objects anymore. You can buy them, though. Local Talk is on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. And you can also listen to today's show online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. For those of you that are wondering, yes, in fact, our stream is down, our live stream, and we are working on fixing it as soon as possible. Our apologies for that. We haven't figured out yet why it's not working, but we're working on it. Local Talk was engineered today by Jonah DeGeest. Thank you, Jonah. And our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Swiss yodeling music because it is Switzerland's Independence Day. Tonight there will be many fires on the mountains. It's a beautiful sight. And we will go out today with the Swiss National Anthem in respect for that. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of our team of local volunteer reporters if you're interested. We'll train you and you can learn more and really come to appreciate our community on a daily basis as we speak with the really great people that make it up, like Keith. So if you would like to join the team, contact us at 292-2878 or at khoifm.org. That's 292-2878 or khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.